the area of where we have responsibilities to protect the public, I would suggest and plead with you to be careful in that area, but at the present time, I request that that you do not pass out House Bill 588.
Mr. Chairman?
Gibson Lloyd?
Thank you very much. I'd be glad to work with you. I do have this in the subcommittee now. I would like the chairman to know I know personally several lives that have been ruined because of your department and because of administrating proceedings where your predecessor had issued cease and desist orders through a press release and then destroyed people's lives, where they spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars fighting the Attorney General's office of the state of Alaska, defending themselves, in the end, 4 years later, to be freed of all charges, but that's after their lives were destroyed. So, yes, there are some problems, and I think that we should address them, and I'm glad that you understand that there are. Because if somebody is going to point the finger, the accuser is going to be the judge, the administering hearing officer. Whatever it is, it's going to cause hardship upon people. You have to pay the fiddler. And this includes the employees of the state. And I would be more than glad to work with you so that we can address this problem. Because whoever charges better have a real good reason. That's the way it should work. They should be held responsible. You should be responsible for everything your department does. Not just at the end of the year, let's get all these security violators. You have to be held accountable. Either that or you should not bring charges. And I'm going to be very glad to work with you on this.
I'll be happy to work with you, Representative Warren.
Thank you for your time, sir. Mr. Jenkins?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Jenkins, and I'm today representing the National Federation of Independent Business. And one of your aides is passing around a copy of our 1984 state ballot, on which our membership votes on various issues that we feel are ones that perhaps should be addressed legislatively. And I would call your attention to the third page of this ballot, item number 10, which is titled Equal Access to Justice. And this question is basically dealing with a specific issue that's being addressed by this bill. And our membership, which now numbers some 3,700 businesses around the state of Alaska, supported legislation of this type by the highest percentage that they've ever supported any type of legislation or any issue that we've ever included in our ballot, and that we had 96% in favor, 2% opposed, and 2% undecided. So I'd like to go on record, first of all, just saying that our organization does go on record as very strongly supporting this type of legislation. I might also mention that National Federation of Independent Business is an organization that is nationwide, and this type of legislation has been a priority of ours in many other states, and there, I can't give you an exact count, but a substantial number of states have adopted legislation which is very similar to the bill that you're considering today. Just a few specific comments, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that I'd like to bring out. I think one point that hasn't really been touched on by previous testimony, and that is that there are just an awful lot of either individuals in business or small businesses operating in the corporate form or partnership form that are just basically intimidated by state government. You know, they look, you know, something happens to them, they're denied a right, they're penalized, and they look at the potential, you know, costs that they're going to incur and in fighting the system, and basically their attitude is, it's just not worth the time and the money, and I can't afford it. And as has already been brought out, even if they win, they still lose because they have to pay all the legal fees, the travel costs, the lost time, which usually means lost profits, that goes with taking on the system. So this bill would mainly at least provide for reimbursement of their direct costs that they incur for fighting the system. I, Mr. Chairman, have not had the opportunity to see the fiscal notes that are included, but I would have to, I think, tend to concur with some of the comments that have been made, and that if we're seeing very large fiscal notes, there's a lot of agencies saying that they're doing a lot of things that, or they think they're doing a lot of things that probably must be improper if they're assuming that they're going to have to pay out these kind of costs if they lose in a hearing. And And I guess I would agree with Representative Ward, who suggested that maybe some agencies in the past have taken actions that they should have looked at a little more carefully before they took action, which was detrimental to an individual or business. I would also comment that it has been suggested that you limit some agencies or exempt some agencies from this statute, and perhaps there are some specific types of agency hearings or proceedings which should be exempted. But I would urge the subcommittee that's working on this to look very carefully and at these various agencies in providing any exemptions from this statute. Just two or three other specific detailed comments that I would suggest the subcommittee look at as they're considering this legislation. And this also kind of harkens back to your previous exhaustive discussion regarding regulations. I see some interesting potentials in here unless the statute is modified slightly. Subsection A, it refers to a person's right, it makes reference to a person. The immediate question comes up is, what does the statute mean by stating a person? A person is typically defined as an individual. But and I have not talked to Representative Tischer on this, if that's what she meant, but I suspicion if we question each representative here, we might get a different answer, and I would suggest that perhaps consideration be given to defining what a person means. From the perspective of our organization, we would suggest that at least it be defined to include small businesses doing business in the state of Alaska, if not all businesses doing business in the state of Alaska. Secondly, it refers to prevailing in an administrative proceeding. Again, you run into the question of what does prevailing mean? Does the individual or the person have to win on, if there are two or three different issues, have to win totally on every issue? Or can they win on the preponderance of issues and still be considered prevailing? So you may want to also look at that question, because you could have regulations come out defining this, if this were adopted, that would take an extremely narrow view of that word and define it as one having to win on every issue, period, or you don't get any reimbursement. Another issue that I see in looking at subsection A or section A and section B is section A is talking about reimbursement of costs when there's a hearing relating to a direct action of a state agency. Section B is referring to, uses the words, if the penalty is imposed on a person in an administrative proceeding. The question came to my mind as I read these two, what if an individual went into an administrative proceeding and the administrative proceeding affirmed the action of the agency? And then subsequently that was appealed to court. Would this still provide for the reimbursement of the costs? And perhaps it would, but it is another one of these questions that I think you may want to look at, because B is talking only about an administrative proceeding which is appealed to court. And it only talks about a situation where the administrative proceeding imposed the suspension, the limitation, et cetera, all the various provisions. So you may want to look at it and also include just a short phrase that refers to if the administrative proceeding also upheld the action of the various state agencies. Mr. Chairman, with that, I would be open for questions.
Chairman?
Thank you. We also want to make sure that we don't tie the hands in any way of state government from protecting citizens, because that, the abuses I mentioned before, I have to believe that was an isolated situation where the state was, it came out later that they were lied to and they did their homework in their usual manner, and that's exactly what it boiled down to. They had just political manipulation pulled on them. But the functions, the balance that we have to find is, in the same token, we've got 150 attorneys rattling around the Attorney General's office. They're there for a reason. And if they're relatively certain of issues, and the various agencies are, we don't want them to stop protecting the public. So that's the balance we need to find. I don't, it's just a comment. What I'm doing now is I'm softening what I just said before, because I believe that there is a purpose. There's a purpose to what Banking Securities is doing and the various other agencies. Somebody has to do it, but they ought to be responsible. I mean, they ought to pay, because that's the balancing point. Otherwise, if there's no money involved, there's nothing to worry about. They all collect their salary and go home anyway.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ward, I totally agree with what you're saying, Representative Ward. Our argument is that basically individuals and business who are affected by the state should at least be on a little more of an even ground than they are right now.
Thank you very much for your
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Peter Freilich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Peter Freilich, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, and I was the author of the letter to the committee with the committee substitute, and I welcome the opportunity to work with Representative Ward and the subcommittee in refining this bill. Essentially, I think we have three versions or several possibilities in addition to the proposal that I've submitted to you and the judiciary version. There's Representative Bettesworth has a similar bill that has been introduced and worked on some HB 408. And I'll try to shorten my comments that I had prepared here in light of the fact that we will be working on this bill in a subcommittee. But I did want to say that essentially the Department of Law, of course, not holding hearings within our department, we have a different perspective on this bill than some of our client agencies, and I think that they have brought to the committee's attention some of the problems with the bill in their position papers and so on. We do, of course, get involved in hearings on behalf of our client agencies, either when they request us to, and that's usually because whoever the citizen or the other party involved in a hearing comes to them, to the hearing, with an attorney. In that case, they turn to us and say, they got one, we want one too. Or if hearings are being conducted under the Administrative Procedure Act, then we almost invariably are involved on behalf of our clients. Now, essentially, the Department of Law's position on the bill then is one of neutrality. We're balanced between sympathy for the policy purpose of the bill that Representative Tischer has expressed. That is, it just seems equitable that since our state is the only one in the country that awards prevailing parties in our court system attorney's fees, then why shouldn't prevailing parties in administrative hearings have the same entitlement? That makes a good equitable policy sense. And on the other hand, the way this bill is currently drafted, it causes a lot of concern, as reflected in all these position papers, with the escalation of how administrative proceedings, administrative hearings are conducted, drawing them out. Frankly, just encouraging the involvement of attorneys. There's a lot of adversarial-type proceedings that take place in state government, and I think a good example is the adjudication of denials of permanent fund dividends. You're talking about $300 to $1,000, and some people who are denied feel that they have a right to receive that dividend. They go to the Department of Revenue. There's a process in place. They work it out. They have an administrative proceeding outside of the Administrative Procedure Act without attorneys, and they processed, it's between $300 and $400 a year in the last year, I believe. So that's an example of how things can happen administratively without getting too complicated, without involving attorneys. This bill will encourage the opposite. Even though there's only $350 at stake in a PFD case, the person figures they can that it will be essentially free. They will be likely to bring in an attorney and pull out the stops, so to speak. So, at any rate, I think that's the balancing that we have here. As most of you probably know, this bill is not really a new idea, but it's a refinement of an idea that's been around for a while, and Representative Bettesworth's bill is an earlier version. This bill is, in our view, in some respects, an improvement on that bill, because it narrows the scope down a bit from HB 408's scope of covering all administrative inquiries and essentially all contacts of the state with a citizen, to this one that says administrative proceedings. We think it's important to narrow it a little farther to, and it's hard to draw the line, admittedly, but a line has been already drawn in our Administrative Procedure Act, and there are certain proceedings that are subject to the Administrative Procedure Act, AS 4462. By using that line that's already there, we can avoid several problems. We avoid most of the types of proceedings where the major liability is involved. In other words, appeals of oil taxes. If you're going to allow Ohio to recover millions of dollars of attorney's fees, obviously that's you're going to have a big fiscal note on that. The APUC, Public Utilities Commission type proceedings, where, for example, now there's a major proceeding going on involving the purchase of Multivisions and Juno Douglas Telephone Company and so on. Attorney's fees are going to be, considering the number of parties involved, astronomical in that proceeding. This bill would make the state liable, conceivably, for somebody's. The state, there the PUC is just acting as a judge, but there will be a prevailing party. So those kinds of proceedings are not subject to the Administrative Procedure Act. They have their own procedural rules. And therefore, if we draw the line there where it already is, we would avoid that kind of top-end liability. We would also avoid the bottom-end type, the PFD-type proceedings at the Department of Revenue. But yet we would cover what I think Representative Tischer is most interested in, if I read her intent correctly, and that is the revocation sort of proceeding, when the state acts to take something away from a citizen that the citizen already has, a license to do something, a certification, something of that nature. Now, those types of proceedings, an occupational licensing revocation, for example, are, I believe, without exception, covered by the Administrative Procedure Act. And so if we then use that line, we will cover those, which I think it's probably most important, makes the most policy sense to cover. So that's one of the two main changes that we have proposed in our committee substitute. And the other has to do with putting a lid on. And that is an idea that we got from a Representative Bettesworth's version of the bill, HB 408. And I want to point out to the committee that the number, I mean, what it says $5,000 because that's what 408 said. That number can be any number. I mean, I was tempted to leave it blank. It should be filled in by probably this committee, since this is the finance committee. It can be 10, it can be 20, 25. The point is, there should be a top end to cover the Ohio multivisions type scenarios.
Thank you. I totally agree with you, and I'd like to address that in subcommittee too, but there's a point we need to address. A case that I'm familiar with, the Attorney General, who was at that time Avram Gross, issued an opinion clarifying the position of banking and securities, that there was one Alaska Native in the state of Alaska and Native American in the United States of America that had a cease and desist order placed before him that this person could not talk to a group of 20 or more if those 20 happened to be Alaska Natives. This was me. And I don't know how you measure that kind of damage, but I never want it to happen again. So we'll work on that in subcommittee.
Representative Tischer, questions?
May I join in, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kirkpatrick. Excuse me.
Frelick,
excuse me. Some of your testimony, Mr. Chairman, I believe is irrelevant to the point of the bill, but I'd like to ask a question, sir. when you suggest that the that your proposal under the Administrative Procedures Act statute chapter is better for this piece of legislation to go to than under the Code of Civil Procedures, I suggest to you that you're suggesting that there should be equity for some, but inequity for the rest. Because what you're telling me is that some people you should apply this kind of equity to, but the heck with the rest of them. Could you respond to that, please?
Well, what I don't look at it that way. What I'm suggesting...
But I did.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting through the chair is that there some narrowing is necessary here. Otherwise, we've got an open-ended, extremely, exposure to extremely high cost. So some narrowing is necessary. To accomplish the narrowing, a line needs to be drawn. No line is perfect. The line, one way that I have discussed with your staff, Representative Tischer, of delineating what we want to cover in this bill and what we don't want to cover, is a list. Either a list of inclusions or a list of exclusions. And in either case, such a list would be pages and pages, and it would be difficult to assemble. So, yes, I agree that there is some unfairness any time a line is drawn, but legislation requires that sort of drawing of lines in pretty much every situation, I think.
Mr. Freelich, thank you for the response. What I'm hearing in your reference to the fiscal notes and the expense and so forth is precisely why I introduced this bill, that you are, or the administration is initiating or has initiated many, many times actions which, in fact, the agency lost. Clear and simple. They lost the case. They lost the situation in administrative hearing. What I'm hearing from you over and over again is that to heck with them if we lost, but we don't want to pay. We're still going to barge ahead and initiate these kinds of actions. And the intent, Mr. Freilich, of this legislation is to halt that kind of impassionate zeal from an agency and to cause them to stop, think, cautiously proceed under the circumstances in which they're directed. And make sure, before they begin, that they are correct in their position. If you're going in and you know you're going to win because you have an absolute, without a doubt, position that can't lose, then your fears, are misdirected. That's what I'm trying to get across to everyone who views this bill as a terrible expense to the state. It's a terrible expense to humanity out there, to the individual. Because what you're saying is that we're going to have to spend all this money paying back attorneys because we lose the cases. Could you respond to that, please?
Well, I'm not sure that I can respond to that.
Why else would there be large fiscal notes if you don't anticipate losing cases based on past history?
Well, I believe that the fiscal notes are put together as best estimates of something that can only be speculated about. And I think that when we have a vague and open-ended piece of legislation, we have to assume the worst. To be fiscally responsible, it must be assumed that the exposure is skewed not towards the best-case scenario, but rather towards the worst case. And I don't put together fiscal notes, and all I know is that this would cost money. I don't know how much money it would cost. I don't know what percentage of administrative proceedings the state loses or prevails in. But I assume that kind of numbers are reflected in those fiscal notes.
Mr. Chairman,
so I can't argue them with you.
I brought up the precise question through my staff to many of the agencies to respond to, and either they weren't able to respond because they weren't keeping records, they refused to respond because they've been losing a lot of cases, but the response I saw, the reading I got, came through the fiscal presentations. That's the only answer. When any time an agency cares less about a new piece of legislation, we always find ourselves with a large fiscal note, justifiable or not. If in fact they prefer the legislation, you will find them being very frugal in their presentation. In this instance, their admission after the fact of asking the question, how many cases are we dealing with, to really secure some foundation for, yes, this is no good, or no, it's okay. We were not able to derive that information from the agencies. And so, if you can come up with a list of specifics on administrative hearings, Mr. Fraley, from all the agencies that they have won or and lost in the past 5 years or whatever length of time you can derive that information, I'd be delighted to have it.
I would too, ma'am, and frankly, I think that's in the nature of an interim research project for a staff of several. That's a big. There's probably over 100 types of hearings, and you know, the data is spread out in different agencies, and I don't have access to that. I think perhaps the House Research Agency or some research body of that nature may be able to handle that sort of request.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Frelick, I wonder if you can draft me up some language. I'm quite interested in your the amount of cost and attorney fees that will be awarded. It intrigues me that perhaps maybe the cost of fees would be reimbursed from the agency's operating budget, the personal services section of those respective agencies. It would eliminate them harshly looking at small businesses throughout the state and would have maybe conclude that they wouldn't have to go after these. But if they made a mistake, then the cost for your Section C then perhaps would go against the agency's operating budget. Could you draft me up some language so I can maybe incorporate it with Section C?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I think that it's my assumption anyway that it would come somewhere from the agency's operating budget. I don't know which.
Personal
I'm not
services.
Too familiar with the different categories, but...
Line 100 is the best right. place for it.
Okay.
Why don't you draft it with line 100? I like that line for some reason. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this particular bill? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dina Hankins. I'm the Southeast Regional Supervisor, Department of Environmental Conservation, and I was asked to testify for the department on this bill. The Department of Environmental Conservation has two sets of appeal procedures that we use administrative appeals for. One is for appeals of what we call compliance orders, or where we're telling someone they have to do something to correct a pollution problem. These appeals of our compliance orders are covered by the Administrative Procedure Act. They're a somewhat formal process, and they take place only between the state and the person against whom we took the administrative action. We issue few compliance orders, and we've had few appeals of these orders. I can only remember one appeal in the last 10 years, and the department prevailed. I can remember only several hearings ever occurring, one with attorneys and one without attorneys. This seems to me to be the kind of hearings that the bill might be talking about covering. The most common administrative procedures that we have are hearing appeals of our permitting decisions. And these usually average perhaps 10 or 12 a year. These appeals are not covered by the Administrative Procedure Act, and we have deliberately drafted them as an informal forum where laypersons can challenge our decisions. These hearings may be between the state and the applicant, or they may be between the state and some third party who is challenging our decision normally in order to try to stop a project. The majority of these hearings have been conducted without attorneys. Those that have been conducted with attorneys have become a nightmare of motions and requests for extension of time, which delay decisions months beyond the time limits in our regulations. The two most notorious in our frame of reference cases that we have currently going on involving attorneys include the Cube Cove adjudicatory hearing, which involves at least five attorneys. It's an appeal by the Sierra Club against our certification of a core permit for Sciatica Log Transfer Facility on Admiralty Island. Our decision was upheld by the commissioner and is being appealed by the Sierra Club to court. The other case I'm aware of that where attorneys have been extensively involved is the Atwood case. There's at least four attorneys involved. It's an appeal by the North Slope Borough of a waste discharge permit that we granted to the Atwood camp at Prudhoe Bay. This issue is still unresolved after 3 years. I might mention that both of these cases are a third party using our process to try to stop projects which DEC has proposed to allow. Read broadly, House Bill 588 would pay these third parties' expenses, which in these two cases are probably at least in five figures by now, to stop projects which DEC has proposed to allow. We think that House Bill 588 will encourage more persons to hire attorneys to adjudicate our decisions and to escalate them to the same unwieldy proportions. We therefore support the suggestion that House Bill 588 be confined to hearings covered by the Administrative Procedure Act, and that it would exclude our adjudicatory hearings of permitting decisions. Several persons have inferred that the fiscal notes, some of which are relatively high, imply that we must be doing a lot of things wrong and that we're losing a lot of cases. In the case of the Department of Environmental Conservation, that is not true. I don't think we lose an average, depending on how you even define lose, one case per year. Our fiscal note is for outside attorney's help for our commissioner to try to help him make decisions when attorney involvement has made these cases so complicated that the commissioner cannot make the decisions without additional legal help. And the Attorney General's office cannot represent both the people in the department whose permit decision is being adjudicated and the commissioner. So one of the two has to have outside legal help if we can't handle it as lay people. Therefore, in our case, we don't anticipate losing any more cases with or without attorneys, but we do think that the more attorneys are involved, the more help we'll have to give our commissioner just to make a decision on the appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else on this particular bill? At this time, I told you earlier, I'm moving that into a subcommittee with Bettisworth, Ward, and Zaroff. The next bill we'll take up is House Bill number 707. This is by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. The original bill prohibits the use of lobbying with earnings made on state fund grants to communities. With the concurrence of Legislative Budget and Audit Committee Chairman, I have prepared a draft CS that prohibits lobbying with grant funds as well as earnings on those funds. Also, the CS prohibits a lobbyist from serving on the state or municipal board, commission, or other public body if an employee of the lobbyist could be economically affected by the decision of the body. There's no fiscal note with this. Is there anybody here to testify on this bill? Representative Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to move committee substitute for House Bill number 707, Finance Audit Committee, with the individual recommendations.
Is there any objections?
Mr. Chairman, I object there. Just page 1, line 28. What does this actually mean that we're precluding a member or an individual just because he's a lobbyist to serve on the board? Commission or public body of the state, I could understand that, but of a municipality, this is a question that I have.
I think the problem with this, in some cases, according to this, is that on municipal boards that perhaps would serve two interests and be economically affected by the decision that would be made, and I'd have to go to one of these that have served on municipal board or
Mr.
on a
Chairman?
School board. Yes.
It's kind of, if I may, I think that it was to clear up a reverse problem within our community. I can only speak for that. We currently have a situation where our assemblyman, Mr. Walsh, is unable to vote on the Clutna Water project because it was going to come along the rail route, so he's been precluded from it. So with a state of our size, it's an intermission all the way along, and I'm sure that since this was put in by Representative Bedsworth, that this was to address a concern that could be only, in our case, it's reversed with Assemblyman Walsh, because he was not able to vote on the Clutna water because of the railroad right-of-way. And what this does, this just says that, you know, keep public elected bodies out of any apparent form of conflict.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I disagree with that, but I think, you know, in some of our smaller communities, particularly in more remote rural areas where you do have individuals that sit on the tribal council or the city council or whatever it might be, do often come down here to Juneau, and they may inadvertently, by habit, I have a couple people out of Kodiak, not on the municipal government, but they do come down, and they feel they have to register as a lobbyist in order to talk to legislators. And so if one of these individuals did get on the city council or borough assembly and did come down and register as a lobbyist, then he would actually be a fraction of this. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit concerned, because sometimes when you get into more remote areas, you have people that are more aware of what is happening are usually those people that are on the councils.
That could very well be. I know why it's in here. The reason it's in there is to keep to avoid a possibility of a conflict. That's why it was placed in.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take a look into this here, and then
you would like to hold until Tuesday.
Possibly hold a. If you have to move the bill, fine. If you don't, I'd like to take a look into this here.
Your request is granted. Representatives, our office will held till Tuesday afternoon, then we'll bring it back up.
Thank you.
Yeah. For your information, people like that come down here from rural areas, they usually come as a constituent that talks to you about a problem. Because some of those service many hats. The next bill I'm going to take up is House Bill number 463. It's been, seemed like, on the calendar for...
ever?
Yeah. Deals. And it's this particular bill, it's an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Health and Social Services to construct a prison in Whittier and providing for an effective date. As a fiscal note of $25 million. I think you've seen it. even though I oppose this particular bill, that I'm going to ask the committee that we move it out with individual recommendations. Representative Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move and ask unanimous consent to leave the turn for out of committee House Bill number 463. It's been a long day, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The House Bill number 463 with individual recommendations moved out of committee. The last bill I'll take up is House Bill number 14. We have taken this bill up about three or four times, and you know it's a permit bill. As you know, the chair, in my 4 years, have never liked this particular bill.
Is this terrible legislation, Mr. Chairman?
It's going to be my request that we move it out of finance using the committee substitute for House Bill number 14, Resources. That's the bill that went through Resources. And that goes out of the Finance Committee with a zero fiscal note. We had we didn't have many meetings on it, but the subcommittee was consisting of myself, Martin, and Zaroff. And I think that...
Mr. Chairman?
If it kept in that particular subcommittee, that this bill would die for another year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, but I do move committee substitute for House Bill number 14, Resources, out of committee with individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman,
zero fiscal note.
Yes, there's amendment to it. It's just a technical amendment.
It's amended. It's amended. I meant to say that.
I've formally changed amendment on page 2 and 4 that the date there 1983 be deleted, and insert the date October 1st, 1984, with where it corresponds with the Senate's dates. So it'll be page 2 and line 17 and 18 and page 4.
Thank you.
Line 22.
Chairman, I accept that friendly amendment. I thought that was already drafted in.
No, it wasn't.
I accept that friendly amendment.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Committee substitute for House Bill number 14, Resources, as amended, with a zero fiscal note, is moved out of finance. This completes our agenda. House Finance.